I've got some really big news, guys. So remember my idea from last week, you know, Mathletics? Well, not to be a name dropper, but I have been in talks with the one and only Lee Iacocca. I mean, the guy is a legendary businessman. I mean, he's what? He's dead. When? Today sometime? 5 or 6 years ago. Well, shit, it sure sounded like Lee Iacocca on the phone. Who in the fuck have I been talking to for the last week or so? Whatever, I will persevere. First, I will perspire, but then I will persevere soon after. But anyway, Lee Iacocca, what a legend. The American automobile executive who developed the Ford Mustang in the 1960s and then later revived the Chrysler Corporation in the 1980s. And Lee Iacocca is just so 1980s to me in the best way. I actually drove a Chrysler LeBaron in the mid-1990s. It was kind of like a mixture of a cop car and a mom car. And the car actually was my mom's car originally. So that's why it deviates from my pattern of only driving hatchback kind of cars like the CRX or the Hyundai Veloster. And shit, I covered both of Lee Iacocca's companies because I also drove a 1966 Ford Mustang in high school. Again, don't like picture me as Brad Pitt in high school. I was much more 16 Candles era Anthony Michael Hall. The Mustang originally belonged to my uncle, and I got it after he died. And this Mustang was cool looking, but it had like zero power. And ending this talk of Iacocca, I mean, what a goddamned Italian sounding last name. I can picture it being like one of the five families in The Godfather with Don Vito Corleone saying,
"It was Iacocca all along."
And Lee Iacocca is buried with his beloved wife, appropriately in Michigan, which was the birthplace of the American auto industry. So one of the gods of the auto industry is buried in the state that birthed the industry itself. I think that sentence makes sense. It's kind of convoluted. And Lee Iacocca's headstone reads, "Beloved husband, father, and poppy." And his original name is on his grave. And hold on to your rigatoni, young paisan, because Lee's original name is so Italian, it would make Jake LaMotta piss his pants. Okay, here we go. Lido Anthony Iacocca. I mean, can you believe that? Lido Anthony Iacocca, or you can kind of go, Lido Anthony Iacocca. You thought Vito Corleone was tough. Well, get ready, because there's a new head of the Corleone family, and his name is Don Lido. I'm going to make him a convertible he can't refuse. Okay, quick correction. Last week I said life was just a bunch of opening and closing doors. I was incorrect. Life has actually become just waiting for an Amazon package to arrive. Mine is going to be delivered tonight sometime.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, so yes, I finally finished Novocaine. It was totally fun, and Jack Quaid is just a likable fucker. I'm still waiting for a couple of Michael Madsen VHS tapes to arrive, but I did watch the curious film The Winner from 1997, directed by the genuinely weird, talented hit-or-miss Alex Cox. I saw him once at a movie festival, and I was like, oh yeah, this motherfucker is bizarro. But yeah, The Winner is strange. Vincent D'Onofrio plays a small-time guy in Vegas who only seems to win when he gambles. Rebecca De Mornay is a lounge singer trying to possibly set him up, and it's got a subdued Billy Bob Thornton. Michael Madsen is Vincent's no-good grifter criminal brother, and an old personal favorite of mine, Frank Whaley. Frank Whaley has a completely 1950s style face. He's like Donald O'Connor or something. Anyway, The Winner was largely enjoyable, though it kind of lost me near the end. And I'm not totally sure whatever acting choices Vincent D'Onofrio was making with this totally work. But the movie is a lean hour and a half, and you could do much worse than give it a view sometime. Okay, a couple of massive figures from the world of media and politics died recently. The big-time broadcaster Bill Moyers died, who also worked in Lyndon B. Johnson's presidency. Lyndon B. Johnson always seemed like an uglier William Holden to me, but he was a complicated guy, and he was a real man, no doubt. Even as a kid, when I saw Bill Moyers on TV, I could tell he was a thinking man, and he also seemed fundamentally decent and thoughtful. I mean, yes, I didn't know the guy. Maybe he loved to torture cats. But from what I saw, he seemed intelligent and warm. So farewell, Mr. Moyers. And David Gergen also died recently. Gergen was just a massive political figure, balancing between the left and the right. He served as presidential advisor to Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton. Gergen was smart as shit, and he also had a fundamental moral core. And after his career in politics, you would see David Gergen on CNN a lot. And I used to love just listening to him talk. There was something about his voice and his intelligence that was just like transfixing. And yes, working in big time politics means you have some blood on your hands. But don't we all have some blood on our hands one way or the other? I mean, I literally do. There's been some blood right here from a massive bloody nose I had a couple of years ago that I have not been able to wash away. Okay, speaking of blood stains, I just thought of a maybe clever New Yorker cartoon. We see a woman in her apartment with her door open, motioning her dog to go outside. And the caption reads, "Out, out, damned spot." Yes, I'm sure a variation on that has been used before. Well, so be it, damn it. Okay, I don't know. Let's do some scenes here. Okay, two British guys are sitting down, and one says, "Here, this is a tea of my own creation. What do you think?" The other guy grabs the cup, takes a sip, slightly grimaces, and says, "Oh my, well, that is absolutely dreadful." Okay, a made-up scene between two of my favorites, Peter Falk and Alan Arkin. And we all know Peter Falk is buried at Pierce Brothers in Westwood, but where the hell is Alan Arkin buried? Well, let's take a look. It looks like he was cremated and his ashes were scattered somewhere. Anyway, back to our scene. Alan Arkin and Peter Falk are sitting at a bar. Peter is smoking and drinking a beer. Alan Arkin is drinking a tomato juice. And Peter says, "Look, people will pay big bucks to see this. Two guys just going at it. A real fight. You know, one that ends in an old-fashioned dick wrestling contest." Alan, in mid-sip, spits out some of his tomato juice back into the glass, looks at Peter and says, "Dick wrestling contest? Did you just say a dick wrestling contest?" And Peter says, "Yes, I'm telling you, it's what the people want." And Alan gets off his bar stool and says, "I'm leaving now." I mean, come on, that's kind of funny. And there's an actual line in a great Alan Arkin Peter Falk movie that always cracks me up, and that movie is 1979's The In-Laws, directed by the massive Arthur Hiller. Peter Falk and Alan Arkin are the respective fathers of a couple that are going to be married. Alan is a mild-mannered dentist. Peter is a loony, possibly insane person, possibly working for the government, possibly both. Peter and Alan go on a slightly insane adventure involving the U.S. government and some Central American dictators. Anyway, at the end of the movie, at the wedding, Alan and Peter are seated watching the ceremony. And Peter leans over and basically asks Alan if they're going to continue to work together. And Alan says, "Things are going to stay just the way they are. I look back on this week as a psychotic episode in my life." I mean, there's nothing quite as good as an underplayed Alan Arkin quote like that. He was one of the best at that. Okay, a new addition to my ever-increasing, ever-psychotic supplement regimen. Spermidine. Yes, you heard that right. Spermidine. And yes, sperm does contain large amounts of spermidine. But don't worry, Mom. I'm not drinking my sperm. Or anyone else's. Because luckily, spermidine is also present in fairly high quantities in wheat germ, which is the source of the tablets that I am taking. What does it do? Shit, I don't know. It can help with fertility, which is of no importance to me at this point, but it may also just help with cognitive function and memory. And yes, I take a ton of supplements, and yes, I try to stay healthy, but I don't necessarily want to live a super long time. I just want the time that I spend here to have some vitality and to at least physically feel good while I am on this planet. So I think this podcast has reached its ceiling of listeners, and let me tell you, that ceiling would barely have room for Billy Barty. Sorry, extremely old reference. Okay, I'll throw in another old reference. How about Hervé Villechaize? Another short man. He was 3'11". And Hervé actually has a bit of a tragic story. I was young when the TV show Fantasy Island was on, but I have the indelible memory of Hervé Villechaize, who played Tattoo, saying, the plane," as another batch of visitors arrived for their Fantasy Island vacation. Fantasy Island was run by the mysterious Mr. Rourke, played by Ricardo Montalban. Fantasy Island was interesting, man, a mixture of light and dark, and most likely Mr. Rourke was some kind of an immortal being. Maybe a fallen angel, and perhaps Fantasy Island was a sort of a purgatory. Whoa, man, that's some heavy shit. Hervé Villechaize found it hard to find acting roles after the cancellation of Fantasy Island, and he just had a myriad of health problems throughout his life, exacerbated by some alcoholism and depression. And he died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound at age 50 in 1993 in North Hollywood. So rest in peace, Mr. Villechaize. Briefly on North Hollywood, we will speak of it some other time, but do you remember that insane North Hollywood shootout from 1997, where two heavily armed bank robbers engaged in a televised shootout with the LAPD on the streets of North Hollywood? It was just an absolutely gripping and surreal experience to watch. I mean, it seemed out of this world at that time. And let's try and tie this episode up at the end here. Speaking of being out of this world, have you seen the 1976 sci-fi film, The Man Who Fell to Earth? Directed by the interesting but flawed Nicholas Roeg. I don't even know how to say his last name. It stars David Bowie as Thomas, an alien who comes to Earth to try and find water to save his home planet. It's an ambitious movie, a bit too arty and ponderous, but it has some pretty amazing moments. And it also stars just a classic 1970s lineup, Rip Torn, Buck Henry, and Candy Clark. I mean, forget about it. The Man Who Fell to Earth is one of those movies like after 30 minutes or so where you will be saying, "What is this shit?" Or you will be saying, "Wow, this is so different and I'm kind of into this." I think it's well done, but it's not like something I rewatch too often. And while speaking of David Bowie, I saw him play in Chicago maybe 25 years ago. He was obviously an otherworldly talent, so many songs of note. I was always particular to Ashes to Ashes from the album Scary Monsters and Super Creeps from 1980. Ashes to Ashes continues the story of our stranded, drug-addicted spaceman, Major Tom, who we first encountered in the 1969 David Bowie song Space Oddity from the album called David Bowie. Well, that was an easy album to title. They got a message from the action man. I'm happy, hope you're happy too. I've loved and I've needed love. Sordid details following. Holy hell, that's like the most David Bowie thing ever. Sordid details following. Oh, that is so good. It's like I can see David Bowie in everyday life hanging out with a friend, and the friend asks, "Oh, hey, did you have fun last night?" And Bowie says, I can't really do a David Bowie impersonation, I'm sorry. "Yeah, after dinner we went out dancing. Sordid details following." So I was lying in bed the other afternoon napping, and for some reason I started thinking about David Bowie. And I came up with a little scenario where he's like at home with his family, and the thing is, like, he's singing everything, like his normal conversation, and it's driving everyone nuts. So in the morning, sitting at the kitchen table with his wife and son, David sings, "Can you hand me the butter and pass me the cream?" And the family looks at him blankly. The son silently passes him the butter, and the wife hands over the cream. Later in the afternoon, David starts to sing, "Okay, you all, let's go to the store to buy some more of what we need." We cut to the wife and son in the living room, looking at each other, annoyed. Finally, it's nighttime. David and his wife are in bed. He dims the lights and he says, "I would love to kiss you right now." And his wife forcefully says, "Look, David, you've really got to stop this shit." And David says, "Okay." Kind of an anticlimactic ending, but I'm doing my best here, guys.